And it's now time for Greenside Up right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you today. And in studio with me is Wendy Powell. And on the phone with us today is Jesse Gilmore. And Jesse, how are you doing this morning, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. And Wendy, good morning. How are you doing this morning? Let's turn your mic on first. There you go. That's one of those. That mic always likes to slide off its holder. There you go. Just grab it like right there if you need to adjust it. That way it's a little bit easier. For some reason, that mic just slides off all the time. So how are you doing this morning, though?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. All right. So we'll go ahead and get started first with Jesse. Jesse, again, good morning. And the first thing that you said you want to talk about, as we talked before the show, was the Kansas Forest Seedling, correct?
Yep, Kansas Forest Service Seedling Conservation Program. So I've put this program on the radio before, but I wanted to give another look into it because it is such a good program for people who need to establish tree plantings or shrub planting for conservation purposes. And what that... what the Kansas Forest Service defines as conservation plantings is tree plantings that will function as wildlife habitat, windbreaks for a particular property, woodlots, timber plantations, educational plantings, or riparian or stream bank plantings. Typically, they're not going to want to sell to people who are doing it for landscape value, specifically for like ornamental value, or for people who are trying to resell. But they have a lot of trees available for people who want one of those conservation purposes that I just mentioned. They have a ton of different native tree species available for sale. They are... finishing up the fall sale right now. The fall sale starts the first Tuesday in September and goes through October 15th. So tomorrow is actually the last day to purchase seedlings for the fall. The spring sale is typically the bigger one and the one where they have more trees available. That starts the first Monday of December and goes through May 1st. Trees are grown in one of two ways. There are containerized trees, which are basically 1 year old and have kind of a head start over bare root trees, which are the other way that they are grown. So if you wanted to do containerized trees, you would have a larger plant in which to put into the ground compared to bare root, which basically have just sprouted. Containerized trees have benefits and drawbacks compared to bare root trees. You do get that extra head start. It is much easier to tell what kind of trees you got compared to bare roots, and it's easier to keep track of where you plant them. For bare root plantings, they are small enough to where you might need to mark them with paint, like spray paint, where you put them in the ground, or some kind of marking flag. However, with bare root, you are going to get much cheaper plants. 25 containerized trees through this program run about $55 total, whereas 25 bare root trees run $25 total. So about a dollar per seedling, which is a pretty good cost for bulk plantings such as this. They come in packages of 25. And you would definitely want to look into the December spring sale if looking for a large assortment of plants. Their fall sale is smaller and kind of limited to containerized trees. For the spring sale, you get bare root trees, you get containerized trees, you get bare root shrubs, and you get containerized shrubs. And all of these trees and shrubs are either going to be native to the United States or specifically Kansas. So there's a good list of things to look out for when they open up the spring sale in December.
All right. So again, lots of good stuff there for everybody. So again, that is the Kansas Forest Service Seedling. They will be doing that this coming up pretty soon. When is that again?
The spring sale orders open up the first week of December.
All right. So the first week of December. So be sure to kind of mark your calendar on that so you can be ready for that. And we will discuss more a little bit later on with Jesse here. But joining me also in studio this morning is Wendy Powell. And Wendy, good morning. How are you?
I am doing great.
All right. Well, Wendy, what were you wanting to discuss today?
Well, I've got some information about vaccine handling, but I also wanted to bring to everyone's attention a few events that we've got planned here in the Wildcat Extension District.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and find out what those events are.
Okay, so the first one is the Virtual Swine Day. That has traditionally been a program that has happened on campus in Manhattan, and they have tons of speakers and great networking opportunities. But this year, that is going to be offered virtually. So it's going to be in two-hour sessions, November 18th and 19th, from 10 a.m. to noon. And I'm hoping that I've been working on getting a location here in the Wildcat District to offer that as an in-person program if you'd like to, hopefully outdoors, so we can easily socially distance. So look for that coming down the pipeline, Swine Day, November 18th and 19th, and they're going to have some really great topics on swine health, nutrition, handling, various topics within the swine industry. And then we're also looking at the Virtual Crops Conference on December 2nd, and that is also going to be offered virtually. And that's a program with K-State Extension and Missouri Extension, so a very well-rounded program. That's going to be from noon to 1, and I'm sure that James next week will talk quite a bit more about this, but they'll have on the agenda soybean fungicides, grain markets, tile drainage, and a producer panel. So that'll be a really interesting program as well. I don't know how much time I have here.
Oh, yeah, you have about 5 minutes here, so.
Okay, well, great. I'll give you a little taste of what I'll be talking about later on. Vaccine handling. I came across a study that Arkansas Extension did a couple of years ago. They had placed some thermometers that automatically take readings every 10 minutes in refrigerators that store animal health products, so vaccines mostly. And these refrigerators were in retail stores, on producer operations, in veterinary clinics, 240 of them. So across 240 various types of refrigerators, freezer on top, freezer on bottom, side by side, etc., in various locations. So you know, in the barn, in the store, on the front porch, in the garage, etc. And of these refrigerators, only a quarter of them were at temperatures 95% of the time to store vaccines. So that really caught my attention. That means that 75% of those vaccines, if they were being used, were probably ineffective. And for those of you that are purchasing vaccines, they're not cheap, and they're not going into cheap animals. So we want to make for sure that we are using products that are being handled properly, so that whenever they are being used in the animal, they are actually doing the job that you expect them to. So only a quarter of them, Kyle. I was just blown away. 240 refrigerators tested, and 25% were able to be that temperature frame of 35 and 45 degrees Fahrenheit, where we can store animal health products.
Yeah, because it's got to be in between. Because what happens if it's too low? If the temperature is too low?
Well, freezing will of course render modified live, or hopefully you're not storing mixed product modified live vaccines, but it's going to alter those. Hopefully they are not toxins, but hopefully you're storing those antibiotics or etc. And the freezing temperatures as well as too high temperatures will alter those. There's a big fancy word, starts with an A. I'm not really sure how to pronounce it. But anyway, that's what really is activated in the animal that will take care of business. But at temperatures that are not 35 to 45 degrees Fahrenheit, then everything changes. And then when things change, if bacterium in there die off, then toxins can be released as a waste product, and that can cause abscesses in the animal, and it can have other negative effects aside from just you injecting something into the animal that's just simply not going to do the job that you want it to. So giving a shot and it not doing its job is one thing, but giving a shot and it causing an abscess or a lesion in a muscle, if it's an intramuscular shot, all of those things can lead to other issues. And down the line on the rail, there's issues with muscle lesions, things like that. So it's certainly something we want to avoid and pay attention to.
Absolutely. So probably get one of those refrigerators that actually has like the digital temperature on it, where you can really zero it down between 35 and 45. I know my refrigerator gets really cold. It doesn't freeze stuff, but it gets really cold.
Yeah. So,
and it has one of those little digital, you know, readouts there to say how cold it actually is in there. And I look there, I was like, yeah, I like that. So,
yeah.
Be sure to got to get in that sweet spot between 35 and 45. Anything colder, not good. Anything warmer, not good for it. And we'll discuss more about that coming up after the break, as we do have the break coming up. And Jesse, we'll come back to you also after the break as well, sir. But we're going to go ahead and take the break right now. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this Wednesday morning. We've got highs coming up in the upper 80s today. Good morning, everybody. We're back here on Greenside Up here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. And joining us back on the phone is Jesse Gilmore. Jesse, good morning.
Good morning.
And also in studio with me today is Wendy Powell. Wendy, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Jesse, we're going to head back to you real quick for just a moment. I just wanted to ask if you had any other subjects you wanted to talk about. And also, if you can just kind of go back over the Kansas Forest Service seedling thing that is going on.
Sure. So the Kansas Forest Service is putting on their seedling conservation program. Every Forest Service in the country or Department of Conservation puts on something like this. There's one in Missouri, one in Arkansas, and one in Oklahoma as well. The purpose of them is to sell native trees to landowners who are interested in conservation planting for windbreak, for wildlife plantings as like a source for food for wildlife, or for potential habitats like quail, for riparian buffer plantings, or for education. They are getting ready to start accepting orders for the spring sale beginning on December 1st. There are many different options for shrubs and trees, many of which have an edible component to it. So if you're interested in something like foraging and you want to get, you know, trees into your property for the wildlife and potentially for yourself as well, the seedling conservation programs of Kansas and Missouri in particular are very good places to look for plants. Missouri offers many, many, many different species of trees and shrubs. They have an excellent selection, and I would definitely recommend checking them out as well. So that was kind of what I talked about in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to share a little bit about an experience I had while out looking for some wild edibles in a conservation area just on the other side of state line in Missouri, and kind of share a little bit of safety tips for foraging during this particular part of the year. I am an avid forager. I love going out and looking for plants that have some kind of edible aspect to them. A couple weekends ago, I was out looking for persimmons, which are not quite ready yet. And I'll talk a little bit more about persimmons specifically here in a second. But I was out at Shawnee Trail Conservation Area, which is just on the other side of the Missouri state line, looking for these persimmons that I had found, or persimmon trees that I had found a couple weeks beforehand, and I wanted to see if they were ripe yet. I was walking along the shoreline of one of the ponds where there were a bunch of persimmon trees, and out of nowhere, I hear this whistle. And I thought, well, that's weird. And I hear a whistle again, and I'm like, is someone whistling at me? And I, you know, do a 360 looking for someone to see if I could find them, and I see this hunting blind about 150 feet off that I was literally standing right in front of, but did not even think about looking for until they had already, you know, whistled twice to get my attention. And so I had walked in front of this hunting blind, which was kind of a little, you know, scary for me, because I wasn't even aware that hunting was legal on the conservation land until I found the blind. And I hadn't been wearing any, like, safety gear, any high-visibility gear, like orange safety vests or anything like that. So I was pretty lucky that they had good discipline with their guns or their bows. I wasn't quite sure if they had their guns or their bow, or if it was, you know, rifle season or archery season specifically. I had the persimmons I needed. I kind of bowed out to give them a chance to get back to their hunting. But definitely, if you're out foraging during this season on land that isn't your own, it's always a good idea to have high visibility gear so that you are practicing, you are the most safe when you might come across other people who are potentially hunting for deer or other wildlife on the same property that you're foraging. So that was a fun little experience I had. It's also always good to double check any regulations where you might want to forage to make sure that you are following all the rules in terms of gathering wild plants. For Missouri conservation areas, I have looked it up. You are allowed to take any plants above ground for personal use, as long as you don't sell them commercially and you don't have to dig up the roots. And I believe those rules are pretty similar for Kansas State Parks as well, but it is always a good idea to double check with any property owners beforehand.
All right, Jesse. Well, so that's a pretty interesting story. I'm glad glad you're okay. And like you said, if you're going to go out and do that, be sure to wear that high visibility clothing so that it's lucky. It's a good thing they have a good eye where they could actually tell that it was you. So good information there. All right, and we're going to go ahead and go back to Wendy. And Wendy, of course, we were talking about a little earlier, just a few minutes ago, about vaccines, and you have a lot more information about vaccines.
Yeah, so vaccines, like I had mentioned earlier, are some of them can be really expensive, so it's important to take care of them properly from the manufacturer all the way down to the farm. And for those of you that didn't hear earlier, there is a pretty thorough study that was done in Arkansas a few years ago where only 25% of the refrigerators that they looked at were in a class that were able to keep animal health products at the temperature they should be. So that temperature goal is 35 to 45 degrees. So for those of you that are storing animal health products, just check those temperatures, and even a cheap thermometer that you can get at the store. It doesn't have to be anything fancy, but go ahead and put that in your fridge, and then go ahead and take the next step and look at it occasionally. So it's one thing to put it in the fridge, and it's another thing to actually log that data that you're seeing, or just to keep in mind what you are storing your products at. So there's other parts of the handling system that there are other measurements that you need to take care of. So the transportation from the manufacturer to your farm, sometimes that involves a lot of different handlers, store or two, transportation on the road. So go ahead and ask the retailer if you're purchasing from a store. Ask them how they handle those vaccines, if they have been stored properly, if they have those products have been returned by another customer. Most of the time, that won't be accepted, but some stores might do that. So go ahead and just go ahead and ask, because that's a lot of money to be spending on something that might not be effective in your animal. Like I mentioned, store your vaccines 35 to 45 degrees. And you need to protect them from ultraviolet light. So any of those clear coolers that anybody's using, those aren't very good. freezing is detrimental to killed vaccines. So there's, let me take a step back. There's two different types of vaccines. You've got your killed vaccine, which is where the active ingredient is not completely active. So it goes into the animal and the immune response comes in and creates an immunity to that bacteria or whatever it is. And then there's the modified live vaccine. And this is where you have to mix it in the bottle. So it comes with two different bottles, usually a sterile water and then like a cake. So it looks like a powder. And you can use a transfer needle or to put that sterile water into the cake. And you always want to make for sure that you're putting the sterile water into the vaccine bottle that has the actual powder in it and not the other way around. Not only would that be difficult, but that's how it's supposed to be mixed. And then I'm getting ahead of myself here. So modified live vaccines are very fragile after they have been reconstituted. But the cake itself, the powder itself, is actually pretty stable until temperatures get to about 75 degrees Fahrenheit. So in the summertime, you do need to be watching that and not let them get too hot. And of course, freezing is not good for it either. So that 35 to 45 degrees is your goal. And I've said that several times, so hopefully it will get across the airwaves here.
Absolutely. So I had my mic off there for a second. So
no problem at all. So vaccine usage, whenever we talk about mixing that modified live vaccine, you only want to mix about an hour or 2 hours worth at a time and make for sure that you use it within that time frame. So if there's something that comes up that delays the use of the remainder of the vaccine, that needs to be tossed. So it might be a good protocol to just mix 1 hour's worth at a time. That way you have that extra 1 hour window. So you have to just look at what you're doing to your processing animals. You know, castration, dehorning is obviously going to take a little bit more time than some pre-breeding shots or applying some dewormer. So knowing how you operate your animals, running through the chute, or how much help you have, just keep all of that in mind. And whenever you go back and you're purchasing your vaccines, only purchase what you need for that short time frame, and then purchase more for your next round so that you're not storing a bunch of vaccine or possibly letting things expire in your refrigerator. Because, again, we don't want to be using ineffective vaccines. So cold weather storage, like I said, freezing temperatures are very harmful to vaccines. So using an insulated cooler with some hot packs would be ideal for moving from the refrigerator to the pasture in freezing temperatures. We are coming on to winter here, so keep that in mind. You don't want your vaccine bottles to be right up against those ice packs or hot packs, so wrap those with either bubble wrap or some paper. Wrap your pack, your hot or cold pack, and then just keep that vaccine bottle away from the actual cold or hot pack. Cleaning your syringes, that's another step where we often have contamination from the needle or from the barrel of the syringe deactivating vaccines. So if you're using killed vaccines, you can use a mild soap or mild disinfectant and hot water. You have to just make for sure that you rinse all of the residue away. But if you're using a modified live vaccine, then you'll want to avoid using a soap or a disinfectant. because those can certainly deactivate the modified live vaccine. So you can use hot water, boiling water is ideal there. Whenever you are at the shoot side, then lots of coolers are shuffled and there's lots of equipment around, but something that is inexpensive to have around, can be inexpensive, is a syringe cooler. So there's lots of different plans online. I have a fact sheet here in front of me that has the instructions to make a shoot side syringe cooler. So if you're using the gun syringes, then this is essentially a small cooler that's got holes in it with PVC pipe on the inside where you can just slide the syringe in between animals and keep that vaccine that's in the barrel cool. Because again, whenever we're working cattle especially, sometimes we're outside and that UV light will be hitting the barrel, warming it up, deactivating your active ingredients. And so then you're applying ineffective vaccine towards the end of your syringe, or your syringe fill there. So I've got the plans here in front of me. So if you're interested in making one of those yourself, it's just an inexpensive insulated cooler with PVC pipe. You need a couple of drill bits. It's pretty easy to make. You can find these online. I looked last night and you can find them on Amazon. They're real fancy, anywhere from $250 to $500 with varying numbers of syringe holders. So they are out there if you don't want to make your own, but they can get a little bit pricey. So this syringe cooler is handy for active operation whenever you're actually working your cattle, and then having another cooler with your extra vaccine in it is handy. So you have two different coolers there, one with what you're using, one with what you're about to use, because you don't want to be opening and closing that cooler to get hot air in there, or cold air if it's cold temperatures.
All right, so lots of great information there. And if anybody has any more questions, say about vaccines, how can they get a hold of you, Wendy?
I'm at the Altamont Extension Office in Labette County. They can reach me at 620-784-5337.
And Jesse, if anybody has any more questions about what you talked about today, how can they get a hold of you?
They can call me at the Gerard office, 620-724-8233.
Well, guys, I appreciate you coming on today. Wendy, I appreciate you coming in today. And Jesse, I appreciate you calling in today. And guys, we will see you again here in a few weeks.
Thanks for having us.
Okay.
All right, that is Greenside Up, and it's now time for Open Line here, coming up here in just a few minutes. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.